Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, and this is the podcast for December 2nd, 2011.
The Science Update Podcast is produced by AAAS, advancing science, serving society.
The interesting thing about the placebo response is not the actual individuals that respond to the placebo, it's the individuals that don't respond to the placebo.
They're always trained away from sad and towards happy.
Females had significantly elevated levels of stress hormones relative to their controls as well as relative to the males.
Sleep provides almost a form of overnight therapy, as it were, to emotional experiences that we've had during the prior day.
This week, could dreaming help heal emotional wounds and the relationship between the placebo effect and chronic pain? Also, a computer program that helps teens at risk for depression. But first, Suzanne Bard investigates why women have a higher incidence of mood disorders than men.
The most important risk factor for developing a mood disorder like depression or anxiety is having been abused or neglected as a child. Women suffer from mood disorders more often than men, and researchers are trying to tease out why.
Men and women are differentially susceptible to mental illness, and we know so little about why that is the case.
Georgia State University behavioral neuroendocrinologist Brad Cook and his colleagues raised male and female rats. At 28 days of age, they were bullied by aggressive adult males. Several weeks later, when the young rats were fully grown, Cook's team assessed their behavior and stress hormone levels.
We found that there was a sex-specific response to the abuse. Females had significantly elevated levels of stress hormones relative to their controls as well as relative to the males.
They also displayed more behavioral signs of anxiety and depression. Cook says understanding how women and men respond differently to abuse could help lead to the development of sex-specific treatments for mood disorders. He adds that this research underscores the importance of using both male and female animal models to study mental health conditions. He says past research has focused primarily on males, which tell an incomplete story.
The reason we use animal models, of course, is to understand the neurobiological mechanisms that underlie the expression of the disease and the development of the disease. Despite major differences in appearance, we actually share quite a lot in terms of the organization of the brain, the neurochemistry, and even the extent and pattern of sex differences. And up to this point, researchers have been focusing for the most part on male animal models, which leaves out half the population. And so increasingly, researchers are beginning to use females in their studies.
He says the problem extends to drug development.
Another avenue of research is in the effects of psychotropic drugs like Prozac, for example. We know that those drugs have sex-specific effects on men and women. But up to this point, the pharmaceutical companies have been developing drugs as though there's only one sex out there. And more work needs to be done in order to devise sex-specific treatment regimens to adequately address the needs of men and women.
Thanks for that report, Suzanne. Depression may stem in part from a tendency to pay too much attention to negative things. Now, Stanford University psychologist Ian Gottlieb and his colleagues are training girls with depressed mothers to counteract that tendency in hopes of preventing depression from striking them. The girls play a video game in which two faces appear on the screen, either one happy and one neutral, or one neutral and one sad. The object is to uncover a dot underneath.
They're always trained away from sad and towards happy.
The technique sounds incredibly simple, but other researchers have already shown that it can treat anxiety. And preliminary results suggest that it does reduce the girl's stress responses to negative stimuli, which is a key marker of depression. Next, they say that time heals all wounds. In other words, that painful experiences feel less painful as they recede into the past. Now, new research suggests that sleep, particularly the dreaming stage, may have a crucial role in this emotional healing. Justin Warner has that story.
Bad experiences often feel less painful after a good night's sleep. That's no coincidence, according to neuroscientist Matthew Walker of the University of California, Berkeley. He and his colleagues showed emotionally charged images to volunteers at two different times.
Here we were interested in trying to understand whether sleep provides almost a form of overnight therapy, as it were, to emotional experiences that we've had during the prior day. And so specifically, we were showing participants these emotional images before a night of sleep and then representing those same emotional images after a night of sleep and testing whether or not their brain was reacting any differently the next morning after a night of sleep. And that's exactly what we found.
For instance, a brain region called the amygdala, associated with emotion, reacted less to the images after a night's sleep. That wasn't true of people who saw the same images after an equal number of waking hours. Looking more closely, Walker found that a crucial factor was a kind of sleep called REM sleep, which is linked to dreaming.
The quality of that sleep accurately predicted how much of a dissipation in the emotional reaction you would have the next morning.
As to why, Walker says that REM sleep appears to reprocess emotional memories without the stress-related brain chemicals that accompanied the original experience.
We know that the neural structures that code emotional experiences are reactivated during rapid eye movement sleep, but those memories are reactivated in this neurochemically safe environment, as it were, this environment with very low levels of stress neurochemistry.
As a result, when the memories come back again, they're less emotionally disturbing. The findings could lead to better treatment for people with post-traumatic stress disorder, who often suffer from poor REM sleep and who experience old traumas as if they just happened.
Thanks, Justin. Oxytocin is a brain chemical that affects how empathetic and sociable we are. Oregon State University scientists report that volunteers watching a silent video of 23 couples sharing painful memories were able to spot people with a gene that makes them respond most strongly to oxytocin. Since a weaker version of the oxytocin gene may be involved in autism, the researchers think the work could lead to better understanding and perhaps treatment of autism and other conditions that affect people's ability to connect with others. And in other empathy research, University of Gothenburg researchers in Sweden report that watching a video of a hand being caressed fires the same neural pathways in the brain as actually being caressed. Viewing an inanimate object being caressed had no such effect. More evidence that our brains have pathways that allow us to literally feel what others are feeling. Next, Suzanne reports on the relationship between the placebo effect and chronic pain.
Part of the pain relief that people experience after taking an analgesic is due to the placebo effect, our brain's expectation of relief. But some people don't experience any relief from the placebo effect at all, according to University of Manchester neuroscientist Alison Watson.
The interesting thing about the placebo response is not the actual individuals that respond to the placebo, it's the individuals that don't respond to the placebo.
Watson says the placebo effect works in part by activating the body's natural painkillers, called endorphins. But she says the brains of people with a chronic pain condition called fibromyalgia may have a defect that breaks down those endorphins before they can do any good. Her team is studying whether it's possible to make the placebo effect work better for them.
The implications for this in the future would be to develop drugs that actually modify the endogenous opiate system and perhaps stop these endogenous opiates being broken down in the brain.
That could be welcome news for millions of people suffering from chronic pain.
Thanks, Suzanne. Well, that's our show for this week. Next week, could your dirty laundry be damaging the environment? Also, can wine and wildlife be mutually compatible? Until then, tune into the Science Update Podcast Daily Edition every day, Monday through Friday. You can find it on our website, scienceupdate.com, or at iTunes. You can also check out Science Update's fan page on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. And if you have a science question, give us a call at 1-800-WHY-IS-IT. If we use your question, we'll send you a Science Update mug. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirshon for AAAS, the Science Society.